Iambic Audiobooks and Bundoran Press present Fall from Earth by Matthew Johnson, read by Emma Newman. Chapter 1. Planetfall in 90 seconds, the computer said. The falling pod hit atmosphere, shook violently as the air pushed back against it. Any items the convicts had left unsecured bounced from wall to wall in smaller and smaller pieces. The pod itself seemed nearly as fragile, groaning from the stress. There was no guessing how old it was. Part of a dropship, probably built for the Corp Wars almost 24 years ago. Of course, things aged more slowly in space, as Shi Jin knew. Her 9 dragons, the ship she and Griffin had salvaged and used to start their rebellion, had been as old as this. She had studied enough poetry at the Academy to know irony when she saw it. Jin closed her eyes, tried to relax before the landing thrusters kicked in. At 30, her body was not quite as compliant as it once had been, but going limp was something it could still do. She tensed and relaxed her muscles from head to feet. Her grey hempen coveralls marked her for a convict, the black badge pinned to them for a traitor, and with the next ship not due for 5 years, there was no chance of escape. For as long as anyone could remember, most criminals had been conscripted into the fleet, given the hardvac or no-space jobs that warped genes and minds. She had changed all that. Most of the fleet people who had sided with her during the rebellion had been just those draftees, people who had seen the borderless empire's failings firsthand, and now it was not considered safe to let convicts serve on fleet ships. Instead, they were used to prepare planets for colonization, clearing land and building roads, houses, and sewers. If things had been different, she might have come here 10 or 20 years later, a fleet officer given a grant of land at the end of a distinguished career. But things had not been different, and it was her inability to pretend they were that had made her rebel, led her here. Despite everything, she did not think she would want to trade places with any version of herself that had made a different choice. The roar of the landing thrusters was so loud, Jin couldn't hear the other convicts screaming. Minutes later, the pod touched down with a shock, throwing her against her restraints. There was another rumble as the pod lurched a few degrees to the side. Then silence. Planetfall achieved, the computer said at last. The restraints opened with a click, and Jin and her cellmates rose unsteadily to meet their future. In the ship above, Griffin sighed, remembering his last conversation with Jin before the ship made orbit. "You don't have to do this," he had said, just before she boarded the pod. "If you stay, no one will be able to do anything about it." He could not come with her, of course, having lived his whole life in zero-G. He would probably not even survive the landing if he tried. But there was nothing keeping her from staying on the ship. Jin turned away. "I know, but we're a month away from any other Empire world here. I can make new plans, find a way off this rock." He reached out to hold her shoulders. "Jin, it's over. If they thought there was anything more we could do, they wouldn't have let us live." "They didn't think I could do anything the first time, either. This could be exactly the right place for me to be." He shook his head, his shaggy brown hair and beard trailing slowly behind, without gravity to keep them in line. "I wouldn't count on the other convicts lining up to join you. Most of these people are dissidents and petty crooks, not revolutionaries." "You've never given up on me before. Don't start now." The landing pod's airlock had opened then, the countdown to release begun. She had turned to look at him again and kissed him lightly on the cheek. "I'll be in touch. The pods have comm units, so..." He had nodded, pushed himself away, the reaction pushing her gently into the pod. She was right. Fool that he was caught in her orbit. "Take care, Pliemionic." Jin stood up, felt her legs fail beneath her, victims of more than a month at zero-G. Steadying herself against the wall, she moved slowly out of the room, leaving her 3 cellmates to find their planet legs and clean themselves off. She headed for the airlock, impatient to see her new prison. A few of the other convicts were already out of their cells, hunger and gravity conspiring to make their steps slow and unsteady. She ignored them, stepped into the lock, and waited for it to cycle. A sour, rotten smell reached her as the outer door hissed open, overwhelming the stale, recycled air. They had landed in a long, broad valley, bordered by hills on one side and a wide river on the other. All around were jagged blades of a stiff brown grass, and as the ground rose to the hills on the horizon, it was covered with hundreds of identical stunted trees. The rotten smell was almost overpowering now, the sky above a sickly yellow. Turning her head, Jin saw the other three pods scattered across the valley. She set off for the closest of them, about a li away, a few minutes' walk. The grass, as sharp and stiff as it looked, tore through the legs of her coveralls and drew blood. Halfway between the pods, she began to feel dizzy and sucked more air in. Her vision was starting to blur, her lungs to burn. She stumbled and felt the grass slice through the skin of her knee. How far was it to the pod? 100 paces? She tried to control her breathing, forced herself to keep going. Up ahead, the pod's airlock was opening. She had no breath to spare, but had to warn them to stay inside. No sound came out when she opened her mouth, and before she could do anything else, the world went grey and slapped her, hard. Jin opened her eyes, fought to focus on the figure standing over her. It was an older man, in his late 50s or early 60s, with very short white blonde hair. As he leaned closer, she saw where shreds of plaskin had eroded around his right eye, revealing a shiny metal socket and camera lens. "Are you hurt?" he asked. Jin fought for breath to speak.
Airlocks. Close. Not enough oxygen."
"Yes, I know," the older man said. He'd sat down next to her, helped her sit up. "We've let all the pods know to stay sealed." He paused, leaned closer.
"My name is Father Teyu, by the way. Heresy."
She pointed to the black badge pinned to her coveralls. "Shi Jin. Treason." There had been no question of hiding her badge. She needed it to get her food rations, and her grey hempen coveralls had no pockets in which to keep it. It wasn't really necessary to have badges to mark them as convicts. With the next ship not due for 5 years, there was no chance of escape. But then, the real purpose of the badges was not to let others know they were criminals. It was to make sure they knew. Father Teyu nodded. At this distance, Jin could see his implant clearly enough to see the tiny character, T-Ain, Heaven, stamped on it. His mark, she supposed. "I thought as much. You look rather like the actor who played you in your trial." "I didn't see it. How was yours?" "Very informative. I confess I wasn't going to watch, but I wanted to know how they'd come up with a recantation for me." He smiled. "At any rate, we have more important things to discuss." Jin stood, slowly. "The atmosphere. We can't..." "It's not quite so bad as that," Father Teyu said. He was keeping his voice low and level, trying to calm her. "I suspect your collapse had as much to do with your being hungry and unused to gravity as with the lack of oxygen. A few other people have been outside exploring since you arrived. The air is thin, and there's something in it our bodies don't like. Probably whatever it is that makes it stink so much. But we should adapt in time." "We'll need to generate more oxygen to get that far," Jin said. "And there's no way we can terraform this place. They just sent us with basic construction equipment, not oxygenators." "Perhaps there was a guai in the first survey's team data, giving the colonization office the wrong information. We'll know soon enough."
"What do you mean?"
"Didn't I tell you? The colonial magistrate is on his way. He should have answers to some of your questions." "I hope so," Jin said, wondering what kind of incompetent a civil servant would have had to be to land this assignment. Being sent to a place like this was almost as much of a punishment for the magistrate as it was for the convicts. She turned to the airlock, looked out through its porthole. Outside, a young man wearing the blue and gold silk robes of the soft church was helping an old man walk over to the pod. Each was carrying a pen-sized breather they brought to their mouths every few minutes,
like the one Father Teu had taken from the pod's kit box to rescue her. The younger man stopped regularly to swear at the sharp grass tearing at his legs. The older man was wearing standard convict grey coveralls, but did not have a badge showing his crime. Instead, he wore the stylized vole of the colonization office pinned to his chest. It was silver, marking him for a magistrate. Jin leaned against the porthole, trying to get a better look at the old man. As he came nearer to the airlock, she saw his face. "Thank you for coming," Father Teu said, helping the older man inside and giving him a new air puffer. "Magistrate Linden, welcome. And your name, Brother..." "Bennett Sims, Brother Bennett Sims," the young man said awkwardly. He was tall, with light brown hair cut close to his skull. His face was red from exertion, and the dozen small cuts on his legs were dripping blood on the carpet. Father Teu nodded and smiled at the younger Delphos. The creed they had each been taught told them to embrace the similar. Best to do that now, and hope Bennett might see past the white heresy badge that separated them. After all, the way Teu saw it, the church had split from him, not the other way round. "You've no doubt noticed this world is not what we expected," Father Teu said. Bennett nodded and turned to Linden. "Magistrate, what do you... that is, what can we do to meet our new terraforming needs?" For a moment, Linden said nothing. It seemed to Father Teu as though the magistrate was not fully there. Something about Linden, he could see, had made Jin furious. She was shooting him daggers and avoiding his glance by turns, but to all evidence Linden saw none of this, staring blankly ahead, as though seeing ghosts. "I don't know," Linden finally said. "I think Magistrate Linden is saying..." the younger Delphos, Bennett, began haltingly.
"Don't use that title," Linden said. "Just call me Unde, please."
No one spoke for a moment. Father Teu knew magistrates could never admit to not being in full command of any situation, and were trained in particular words, postures, and vocal tricks that made people instinctively grant them authority. Linden was using none of those, and Teu could see that it puzzled Jin as much as it did him. After a moment, she spoke into the silence. "There's a traveller, a spacer, still up on the ship, who's a friend of mine," Jin said. "They know some ways of generating oxygen without dedicated equipment. If I can contact him..." "There are two message rockets on the ship," Bennett said, to Ande. "If we tell the colonization office about the situation, they'll send someone to help us." Jin turned to face Ande, finally looking at him directly. "Sir," she said, clearly choking on the word. "We can't wait that long. It will be at least a golden month before any help can come. We need a new source of oxygen right now. You have to authorize it."
"I can't," Ande said, after a pause.
"Will you authorize sending the rockets?" Bennett asked.
"No, I won't. Do what you need to do."
He closed his eyes, took off his silver bowl pendant, and put it in the pocket of his coverall. Father Teu looked from Bennett to Jin, saw each of them unsure of what to do next. He could not know why Ande had refused his charge, but it was clear this was his best chance to earn a place for his followers on this world.
"At any rate, we must stand together," he said, before either of the others could speak.
"With what we are learning about this world, disunion could be fatal."
"I'm not sure..." Bennett began.
"I hope you're good at holding your breath," Jin said. She shrugged and turned away. "I'm going to use the communicator. If any of you want to help get an oxygenator going, you're welcome to."
"I need to... We have to send that message," Bennett said to Ande. "We can't let her..."
He turned to Teu beseechingly. Father Teu could see the younger man's face darken as his glance fell on Teu's heresy badge.
"We are more alike than different," Teu said.
Bennett paused for a moment and then shook his head. He turned back to Ande.
"I'm sorry," he said, and then turned to go back into the pod.
Bennett could feel his eyes glazing over as he stared at his datapad screen. This was not going well. He rubbed his eyes with his hands and turned away from the screen. The featureless white walls of the pod's maintenance room offered little in the way of relief from the screen's glare. He closed his eyes and remembered the look of the planet outside, tried to reconcile it to what he had seen on the briefing vid. It was impossible. Life on that planet would have been hard, yes, but he hadn't asked for an easy assignment. With only light terraforming to be done, he could have helped the convicts become a community, and perhaps, once they no longer felt like outsiders, he could have convinced them that they could again become compatible within the church. "There is more glory in ministering to the lost," they said, "than in giving Enosis to the Lonely One, the Emperor herself." This planet, though, seemed almost beyond hope. It looked like the very first thing they would have to do to survive would be to disobey orders, making their own oxygen. He was here to minister to the convicts, not get involved in politics, but still, to be compatible meant all of humanity sharing one same culture, the same beliefs, and the authority of the magistracy was central among those. If enough started listening to Jin, this whole planet might be lost to the void. The sky was the hardest thing to accept. All the worlds in the borderless empire, even the marginal ones like Jutland or Setebos, had blue skies, or else blue-tinted domes. That was what the blue on his robe stood for, that shared link with all humanity, and connection with the All-Soul. Could this be a sign that he had been wrong, that he had not been called here, after all? A voice came from the door. "Brother Sims?" she asked. "Yes," Bennett said, turning in his chair to face her. He started at the sight of the red murder badge on the young, terribly thin woman's chest, and then reminded himself this was why he was here. "I heard that you would come with us, to minister to us," she said. "It has been a very long time since I have been to a service. Would I be permitted back?" He made himself smile, uneasy. "Of course, that's why the church is soft. Everyone who sincerely wants to can become compatible."
"And if my crimes are too great?"
"Nothing you could have done is so bad it can't be forgiven." She was silent for a moment.
"But what if they are? What if the enemy has claimed my soul?"
"There is no enemy. There is only the All-Soul and the Void." Bennett studied the girl's face, looking for some hint of what she was thinking. He wondered where she had gotten her ideas. The last of the Tartarids were supposed to have been excommunicated dozens of years ago. He supposed every heresy lived on in pockets here and there around all the stars.
"Of course," she said. "Thank you, Brother Bennett."
He rose from his chair as she turned to leave. "Is there anything else I can help you with?"
"No, thank you."
It was only after she was gone, and he had settled back down in chair, thinking that his time studying in the house hadn't prepared him for this, that he realized he had never learned her name.